You're listening to Pop Culture Fanatics, a podcast for the crazy fan in you.
I'm saying a prayer, George. A prayer for the whole world.
Everybody, and welcome to a special edition of Pop Culture Fanatics. This is a new segment that we're introducing to you for the Godzilla fan in you. This is called Godzilla and Friends, a segment where me and, of course, my friends as well, too, that join the podcast, go ahead and rate all the Godzilla movies from the original all the way down to the King Kongs and the Gamoras of the world. I'm your co-host, Val Cisco, and, of course, with me, as always, my right-hand man, Mr. Jacob. How you doing, sir?
Hey, what's going on? What's going on? Doing good.
Are you excited for this, bro? Because I know you are knee-deep in Japanese culture right now. Me, myself, I'm a Godzilla fan since I was about 5 years old, so I'm excited. But what are your thoughts?
No, I'm really excited for this because, you know, when I jumped into the, I wouldn't even say the Godzilla bandwagon, but, you know, when I was first introduced to the Godzilla movies, it was like starting out of the 80s movies that had, you know, that were taking full swing. And this was like 10 years after their time, you know, so I'm ready to take it from the very top and explore what really made this such a global treasure. So I'm really psyched for this.
Yep. We're going to go from the good, the bad, the ugly, and we're going to have a lot of fun with it. We're going to try to make this a once a month activity where we just get together, we have a few laughs, we talk a little shit, and we just explore the love and the phenomenon that is Godzilla. Before we get started into the movie, we're going to start off with Godzilla, Gojira, 1954. What attracts you to Godzilla? I mean, you can tell a lot of people these days look at it as a cult phenomenon, like a cult favorite, but to you yourself, what is the allure to this kaiju specific?
You know, honestly, this is something that I could, like you said, I'm knee deep in Japanese culture. And this is something that I can, that I would only expect from, you know, Japanese creativity. When you really think about it, because, and it's not just, cause there's so much surrounding Godzilla, you know, even the different layers, the different, you know, the different storylines, the different arcs that eventually came with it. This is something that could have only come from, you know, Japanese mind, or the many minds. And that, I think that's what attracts me. So I guess it would partially make me a weeb, I guess. I really hate to use that term, but I mean, if we're being realistic here, I guess that would make me a weeb. But yeah, I think that's why, because, you know, when you look at a phenomenon such as, you know, Godzilla and, you know, other Japanese lore, there is a kind of partial cringe, partial like hysteria, you know, like very comical, but like very serious and dramatic. Like there's just something very different about what comes out from Japanese media. And Godzilla is like the prime perfect example. And I guess that's what allures me to it.
I love it. I love that answer right there. You know, there's so many different ways you can look at Godzilla and take something from him, it, however you want to call it these days as well, too. Especially if you want to dive into the 1998 American version. It's asexual. Producing eggs. Godzilla's non-binary when before that term was around.
He's been a leader of the LGBTQ nation for centuries.
Me, myself, I mean, just from a young lad in the Bronx, New York, I was always just into dinosaurs in general. Since I was like 2 years old, that was just my jam. And I think that's every little boy's jam. Once in a while, dinosaurs do come across them. They're like, ooh, cool, monsters, they'll eat you. That's rock and roll. But I have this like fond memories of going to Blockbuster with my father. And, you know, I wasn't the type of kid that would want Nikes or like Jordans and stuff like that. You know, if I got to see my dad every once in a while, which was far or few in between back then, you know, it wasn't that I wanted something materialistic. I just wanted to stay home and watch a movie with him. And he let me pick whatever I wanted. I remember the first thing I saw was this, like, giant freaking lizard, fire-breathing dragon-type motherfucker that was fighting some other roach-like motherfucker. Like, the original Godzilla wasn't my first movie. It definitely was, I think, Godzilla versus Megalon, where he fights a giant radioactive roach. And I was like, I'm fucking down. Like, I am down for this. Like, I don't get anything that they're saying. I don't get the plots. I don't get... Let's not even talk about the plots in later movies. But I just want to see Fighter A versus Fighter B. That was the first introduction right there. As my palate got a little bit more sophisticated when I got older, with the flip side of the coin, I love just how unapologetic Japanese artists were in 1950. And going on from there as well, too, because if you look at this right here, and the theme is right there, like, you're looking at 1954, we're not too far away from Hiroshima, and this is basically the same, you know, theme, you know, they're parallel to each other, of just, like, the devastation of a nuclear attack hitting your city, your country, and the cry for help, yet help is not really being given to you. And I love the fact that at that time, in that era, Japan could be very self-referential rather than America. America kind of just sweeps things under the rug. They really weren't into the war movies in 1950. In that time, going into the 60s, it was spy dramas and melodramatics, but it really wasn't like, hey, look what the
gangsters
fuck we
with
did.
Really high gangsters with really high pants and fast talking.
You know what I'm saying?
Now I'll tell you, this is why I can't hear roll.
Cigars everywhere. Champagne flowing everywhere. First class or no class, say. Ham American Express. I digress. You know, but you didn't really get that from American television, but how Japan just was really unapologetic of what happened and the mistakes that were made and what came about, radiation and nuclear holocaust, basically. And I was a fan of that. I was a fan of all the other little tidbits coming from those movies, whether you look at Godzilla and the Smog Monster, where it's like an allegory for pollution, Godzilla 1984, 85, however you want to call it. It's another way of looking at radioactivity coming back into the new age, into the technological age. I love that side-by-side content. Just it gets me going to see that and how unapologetic they are.
You couldn't have said that more better. And honestly, I think, to be honest, I don't really think that a lot of people see that only because they would choose not to. Maybe just because it's really hard to explain, you know, something like this from an American point of view, unless, you know, we can get as far as, you know, just as this moment where we can see it, you know what I mean? And even getting to that point is something that you don't see often and wouldn't really expect, you know? So I think that's another reason why I've, you know, been knee deep with Japanese cultures. It's because, like, there's so much that I want to understand because I've only seen, you know, always been on the outside looking in, you know, what can I learn from them directly?
No, definitely. I think that's because of the fact that from an American point of view, if you look at, you know, the 1940s and World War II, as much as, like, how little we were in that war, like, America just got into the war by the end.
They were the Mexicans showing up late to the party.
Straight up. That's exactly what it was. We were like, not my problem, not my baby, I don't want it. And once we got there, if you look at any slice of American pie right now, it's World War II movies. It's like, we were the heroes. We were the band of brothers. We were the band of misfits.
Saving Private Ryan.
straight up Forrest Gump.
oh, can we talk about the god awful was it Midway that we saw in theaters?
Midway,
which was just a nationalistic, just forced patriotic propaganda movie, just like America, American patriotism at its finest. Like, seriously, anybody's offended by that, that's your problem.
It is, because I will take Ben Affleck and Josh Hartnett in Pearl Harbor, because at least it's a fucking entertaining movie. It's historically inaccurate, okay? This is Alec Baldwin.
Cuba Gooding Jr.
With the little shirt. I will take that bullshit movie over Midway any day.
God.
But yes. Looking at that, trying to get back on track here, that is American culture when you look at World War II. But it's not until maybe the late 80s going into the 90s and now where you see, yes, America defended itself from the Pearl Harbor attacks. But here's the repercussions of that. Like, yes, we dropped bombs, literally, on another country. But yet, there's an after effect with that. There's literally death, misery, radiation, just a whole landscape of the world changed because of us. And we're acknowledging that now. We're taking blame for that overabuse of power there. And I like seeing that now, but America was not going to touch that in 1950 whatsoever.
Mm-mm. So then we get into Gojira.
Mm-hmm. So this film, 1954, Brilliant movie when we first get into this movie. Like, how did you like the whole black and white aesthetic? How did you like just the cinematography of the movie? Everything's very bleak and dark. But as the movie itself, I think the black and white just, this wouldn't work in color whatsoever. Like, even if you try to put some color into it today and give like a reimagining or just a remastered version, color would not work. The black and white aesthetic just works so well in this film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, without jumping too far into the game either, I mean, this movie had so much perfection in every way for a movie that was filmed, produced, and directed in in the 1950s. I mean, as I was watching this, I was like, bro, for a 1950s movie, this movie has amazing effects. Like, there's a lot of heart put into this damn movie, and you can tell. And, you know, everything worked in sync. And going, you know, starting with the beginning, you cannot have the black and white work if it not were for the accompanying music. I think the accompanying music and even, you know, the roars that you get at the beginning from Godzilla, like, it just set you up for, like, holy shit, we're on a ride now. Like, what are we entering? So that very beginning has possibly got to be one of the best openings for a film, because it's just making you feel uneasy, but suspense, you know, you're in this state of suspense and wonder, because you're like, you know, I have to see this now, you know, I have to know what's going on. And it's because of that black and white feature, it's because of the music, and it's because of, you know, the sound effects of Godzilla that just set up the stage, and you're just ready to go.
Mm-hmm. And we're ready to go right here. Godzilla, or Gojira, as it's called in Japan, is a 1954 Japanese kaiju film directed by Ichiro Honda, with special effects by Eiji Tsuraiba, produced and distributed by Toho Studios. Do not fuck with me right now. Yes. Yes. Okay. Tsuburaya. Eiji Tsuburaya. Did I say it correctly this time?
Directed by Ichiro Honda, with special effects by Eiji Tsuburaya.
Uh-huh. Okay. I had good the second time I got it.
Tsuburaya.
Tsuburaya. Okay. Distributed by Toho Studios.
Toho.
Toho.
I'm sorry. It's the learning in me.
This is the first film in the Godzilla franchise, of course. Fun fact about this movie, man. This movie holds the Guinness World Record of, well, this franchise holds Guinness World Record. It'll be the longest running film franchise in history. And it all starts with this movie right here. Knowing that this is a huge monster movie off the back as well, too.
Mm.
In 1954, where franchises were far few between, I think the first franchise we really had there was probably Universal Studio Monsters. Other than that, maybe James Bond going into the 60s. Like, put yourself in Honda's mindset right now. Do you see this more as like a political, like, stamp right there? Like, hey, I need to get this film out so that the world can see it. Or in your head too, is this like, I can make so much money with a monster movie that can continue on and on and on and on?
Based on just this movie alone, I want to say it is a political statement, curtained by the animatronics, you know, everything, you know, it's a political statement guised by, you know, this unrealistic situation. And I honestly don't see this as something that was intended to be long running. To be honest, no.
Same here. I think this was supposed to be a standalone film. The fact that this immediately got a sequel, I think, is because of fan requests of design of the monster itself, design of Godzilla itself. Basically, the synopsis is just Japan's authorities deal with a sudden appearance of a giant monster whose attacks trigger fear of nuclear holocaust during the post-war Japan. Right there, that does not sell you. If you're, number one, I know I'm like sidetracking a lot, but you just gotta put yourself in Japan at that time. Like, literally, you're not even a decade, you're not even separated from a decade of the Hiroshima attacks.
Mm.
So you see a film like this that's so close. You get a little biography, but not biography, a little synopsis right there, the film itself. Are you kind of like reluctant on watching this movie? Like, is this like, the only way I could describe this is like maybe watching maybe Passion of the Christ when it came out, I believe, what, 2004? Mm-hmm. And like people are like, do I really want to watch Jesus get whipped for about 2 hours? Like, from a Christian point of view, I guess, right?
I almost said something and I'm not gonna do it. I almost said something, I'm not gonna do it.
You should do it.
Do I jizz? Do I cry? What do I do?
But for real, like, as far as from a Japanese standpoint, like it's, put yourself in their shoes. Like, how hard could it be to look at a film with these kind of themes right now? Mm-hmm. Like, is this like maybe escapism to you as an audience? Or mm-hmm. Or are you curious at all because it's a monster movie? Like, what? How would you feel like putting yourself in your shoes at that time?
You know, and that's a really good topic. It's something really good to bring up because, again, it's, you know, you're asking an American from American's point of view. You know, like, can we really fathom what these people experience? Like, can you truly, like, grasp what these people were feeling? And then, you know, like you said, not even 10 years later, you're making them, not making them, but, you know, you're showing them a very, very, very sensitive topic, you know? So this was big for the director alone because, you know, it's like, he had to be thinking, you know, what are my people going to be feeling about this? You know, how are they going to take a topic such as this? Because, you know, they're not going to be stupid and they're going to basically see between the lines and see what the, you know, overall message is. So, like, this was a very risque movie.
Yeah, very much so. Like, the only thing I could compare right now, like, specifically, like, a better analogy in my head now is after 9/11. Maybe 5 to 6 years later, you get all these 9/11-esque movies. I remember the one with Nicolas Cage, the one with the dude from Twilight, where the end of the movie is he's actually in the Twin Towers and the shit gets blown up. That's a lot. As a person who was actually in New York at that time, dealing with that situation back in 2001, I already knew, like, a month later, I was like, yep, 9/11 movie coming through. Like, we got, what was that plane movie? Flight 83?
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of these, like, post-9/11 movies started coming out within, like, 4 to 5 years. And I gotta admit, I felt uncomfortable. I didn't even watch those movies until, like, maybe 10, 15 years later. Like, because it, I don't know if it bothered me, but I felt like it just, it was too soon for me. So I can imagine right there as someone who lives in Japan, whose family probably dealt with that, or even hear the horror stories of what happened, like, do I really want to revisit these feelings again?
Yeah, so definitely someone who was ahead of their time and was really putting himself out there. You know, because yep. If it's one thing that the Japanese really do take to heart, and that's respect.
Very much so, very much so. Like I said, they're unapologetic. They put everything on the line right in front of your face right there. Yep. Like I said, this movie made about $183 million in its theatrical debut. Immediately, you know, it was some of the rights were bought by America, United States. And, a heavily edited version of this movie happened. So like I said, 50% of this movie was edited with American actors. And
the world can't have anything because America has to have it too.
Literally. And of course, America looked at this as, we're not looking at this as a political statement. We're looking at this as the next King Kong.
Basically, like, that's what I was just thinking. I was like, hold up.
Which is hilarious too, because not even a couple of years later, not even 10 years later, we get King Kong versus Godzilla from Japan. So, you know, Japan kind of turns its back on the statement itself and says, well, you know what? Maybe America had it right. Maybe all we need to do is just stomp on shit and make everybody happy.
I mean,
you gotta make money somehow, right? But let's get into this masterpiece, Gojira, right here. You know, the movie starts off very ominous as well, too. We get the whole mystery angle of ships being terrorized and sailors talking about, you know, this beast or something or a storm is just wiping ships out or fleets out. And then we get a very brief glimpse of Godzilla just terrorizing this, the village itself. How did you feel about that first, like, maybe 10 minutes of the movie of just very bleak, eerie, and mystery revolving the monster and what was happening?
I'm going to be honest. I thought it was funny. Because it's like... because, like, okay, like, it was... I don't really know how else to explain this, but it was like, I don't know exactly where like the 10 minutes cut off, but it was like, oh, something's happening. Let's send a ship. Yeah, so that ship's gone too. Let's go ahead and send another ship. That's why I was like, oh, like how many times do we have to realize like something's going on before we stop sending ships? But, you know, again, I love how they set it up because, you know, it leaves you in mystery. And, you know, you also have to put yourself, you know, in that mindset back at that time, you know. It's going to look cheesy now. And, of course, that's why I'm able to laugh about it now. But putting yourself there, it's like, okay, you know, you're obviously seeing something's hurting these people. But what is it? So, you know, I think they did the right setup with creating that mystery. I think it was done very well.
You know, you get that that little village of Oho, I believe. Odo, excuse me. And maybe you can pronounce it better than me. Is it Odo or Odo?
Odo Island.
Mm-hmm. And you get like, which I feel like this movie has its cake and eats it as well too, because Godzilla essentially is radioactive sea monster. They say it in the movie, but in this part right here, one of the elders does refer to Godzilla as the sea monster. So he kind of establishes that this old man already knew about this monster for generations and generations. Now,
that's where I got confused.
Exactly, right? So do you take this as like maybe like how the Greeks saw the Kraken or how, you know, Nessie and Loch Ness and whatnot, like, you know, established character or a crypto that's around that people know, a legend, urban legend that's around that finally actually comes true.
That's honestly all that I saw that as. Like, there's always, and he's always got to be like damn near 100 years old or something. You know, just like the old. I'm surprised he didn't have, you know, like the, you know, the super like just decked out like wise man look. But that's all that I took that as. It's like, oh yeah, it's gotta be the old dude who's like probably had his father tell him the story and his father's father, you know. Mm-hmm. Because there's always that one person, and I think that because it's Godzilla, it had to have that person. It had to have that, you know, already established lore. And I'm pretty sure some other, like, Japanese people were probably looking at each other like, did you know this? This isn't what... I mean, and correct me if I'm wrong, you know, I don't know if there really was ever a Gojira story. But that's the way I saw it.
That's the way I saw it as well, too. I mean, in the second movie, they kind of like, oh, the actual second movie where you fight Godzilla Raise Again, they talk about Godzilla species because it's obviously a second Godzilla. We'll talk about that later as well, too. But in this movie itself, I could definitely see like that old man syndrome, like, oh, my daddy told me this, my grandpappy told me that, my grand-grandpappy told me this, don't go in the water, Kraken's gonna get you. Fun fact about Godzilla Gojira as well, too. In this movie, it was actually supposed to be a mutated octopus. And they changed it because of the fact that it was tested well that a dinosaur-like creature would have been better for TV, or at least for effects.
Yeah, you know, I could see that. And, you know, at that time, it probably would have been a lot more expensive to just, like, keep it in the water, keep it on the water. Right. And, you know... you can't have the fun scenes on land. You just can't. And honestly, though, having kept it in the water, I think it would have been more of a chase because you can hide underwater, which is, you know, eventually what happens, too. And it doesn't make as fun, you know? Like, you had to have it on land. There's not a lot of things, and really think about every movie now. There's not a lot of things in water that works, not even fucking Poseidon. Not even a giant wave.
I will say there's some things that work in water. The Pacific Rim was like, there were at least knee deep in water.
No.
Oh, stop it.
Pacific Rim
is fantastic.
I know. I hated Pacific Rim.
We are going to rewatch that when we get later into this podcast.
I don't even like Mecha, but like, I hated Pacific Rim. It was just another, but yeah, no, I'm sticking with my guns here. A lot of things based completely in water do not work.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. All right. We'll come back to that later on.
By the way, I'm not showering, guys. That's the rain. Like, if you can hear the rain, like, that's the rain. And now it sounds like my shower, but it's not.
No, it's totally fine. It's totally fine. So by this point, you know, 17 homes, 9 people killed, livestock already destroyed and burned. The Odo residents actually traveled to Tokyo and demand disaster relief. So that right there, that doesn't scream like, you know, Hiroshima going back to, you know, Tokyo and just saying, hey, we need help, we need relief. And just like Tokyo, like, well, we'll see what we can do. Let's see if we can, like, figure out what the hell is happening.
Let's send the one guy.
Let's send our one paleontologist because we think it's a fucking dinosaur that came. But, you know, this shit happens all the time. Like, and not just a slew of fucking scientists.
Bro.
Not a slew. Not like a fucking Navy boat of scientists. Like, one fucking guy.
You know,
maybe has a PhD.
I wonder if this was the inspiration for Jurassic Park and, like, reaching out to Alan.
No, definitely. Don't even say it. Like, he Spielberg rips off a lot of from this movie. From King Kong and this movie, he rips a lot from it. And it's the poking the bear. Like, it's there.
But you know what, though? Like, those were also some of my favorite scenes. The scenes with like, all the townspeople and, you know, basically the politics. I love that integrated into movies because... you know, sometimes it may seem like it's overdramatic, but a lot of times it's really not. Like, the acting was done very well here, where, like, people are concerned, people are angry, and then you have, you know, the politicians themselves are just, like, scratching their head, just trying to, you know, pull something out of their ass just to, you know, appease the people, which is what they did. Paleontologist, there you go.
Well, this paleontologist has his work cut out for him, because he travels to the village. And then supposedly this guy, I'm going to butcher his name right here, Kayohei Yamani? No, go ahead, Jake, take it.
Hold on, I'm looking, oh, Kyohei Yamane.
Yamane.
Kyohei.
Well, this
Yamane.
Fucker right here. I'm going to call him KY. KY over here. He leads the investigation going to Odo Island. And he definitely sees this giant radioactive footprint. All of a sudden, he's even more of a fucking expert. He's a radiologist now.
I said okay, the same thing. Also, I was like, holy shit, when did these radioactive... How are they suddenly skilled with reading fucking radiation levels?
He knows the exact radiation level of the fucking footprint, the size, the circumference of the fucking footprint, and then he measures. He takes a fucking full on, not a rough estimate, a full on fucking fact that Godzilla is measuring fucking 50 meters. Now, I don't know. Like, I wanted to be a paleontologist when I was younger. But I knew that in order for me to fucking get to know what the fucking dinosaur would look like, I would have to connect the bones to fucking see exactly how tall or how high it could be. I could maybe give you a rough estimation that, wow, this fucking giant footprint is a fucking giant monster. But 50 meters, we're going to go with that fucker. We're going to tell you guys.
Well, obviously he was the right man for the job, Frank.
The only man. The only
If it was me, though, like, I would have just kind of looked at the footprint and looked at everybody, looked up and was like, yeah, this was a huge bitch.
Yeah. Look, so like I said, KY presents all these findings to Tokyo, to the Tokyo government, estimating that Godzilla is about 50 meters tall, and has evolved from an ancient sea creature and becoming territorial of Japan itself, or Tokyo, or the surroundings of Tokyo. So this guy knows everything. Now he's a fucking
Didn't he figure a lot of that out just by looking at that one like creature that was supposed to have been extinct for like years, like millions of years? He picked it up. He was like, "Huh, this is definitely a giant dinosaur."
Yeah, the trilobite. There you go. Like he was just over there, like because of this specimen right here. I'm going to make a huge fucking assumption, and I'm going to make this fact right now. That's like saying I found a fucking daisy on the floor, and it was crushed, and I'm like, a size 16 fucking boot crushed this, and his name was Harry, and he works as a coal miner. How I know?
Takes a bite out of the trilobite.
He also concludes that Godzilla... basically, it's an amalgamation of a sea creature mixed with the effects of a hydro bomb testing as well, too, which explains the radiation. Because why not? There can't be any other fucking reason besides, well, we were bombing in the water. Something must have got caught. This is that something right there. I mean, give him kudos, because you know why? He's the only fucker doing the job, okay? If I was the only fucker doing the job, too, I would be making shit up my ass all day, yes.
Now pay me $1 million yet.
Straight up. So this is the best part. After the government gets all this information.
The bell.
But even before the bell, they debate. They debate to see if they want to notify the fucking public if there's danger. Like, what the fuck?
Oh, yeah, that's right. I totally forgot about that. That's when that bitch... That's when that chick got, like, real crazy. She was like that... If you want, like, some of the best Japanese... Like, I don't know what it is, but, like, Japanese
parents.
Yes, their anger and, like, the change of their voice when they're angry and they're... Because Japanese is a language of consonant vowels. When they're angry, you can hear the like every consonant. You can hear the k sounds. You can hear the ts. Like it's wild, and they're just like going back and forth. It literally at that point became men against women. If you really pay attention to that scene too, which goes to show you a lot of things too.
Very much so. Yes. Very much so. Which also brings me to this: seeing what I saw now with a lens and. Just debates happening if we should warn the public or if we should just let things simmer down so we figure out more information. You shoot back to 2018 with Shin Godzilla. And Shin Godzilla, that's a bit of spoiler for a later movie that we'll do later on the line, but we get the same fucking shit. Like, oh, there's a giant tail in the water. We don't know what's connected to. Should we alert anybody? Nah, we should go set the fucking boat and have a meeting about it. Oh, he comes on land. Nah, he can't support his body. He's gonna dry up like a prune, like he's a sea creature. He gets legs and arms. Yeah, but he can't support himself. Like, if there's one thing I'm seeing about Japanese politics, it's all fucked.
No.
It's amazing how they're surviving.
No, seriously. I even, like, I'm talking to a friend right now, and, like, he just laid out on Shinzo Abe. Like, yeah. Just laid it out, just, like, how bad it is. And I'm like, bro. Again, when you get to these political seeds and these seeds with, like, political meetings and shit, sometimes it's not always, overly dramatic. Sometimes they are true to its nature.
Very much so. But walk me through the next part right here, the bell.
Oh, my God. The village alarm bell goes, bing! Literally the greatest thing. And like, knowing the time period, I was like, bro, that's gotta be their alarm bell. Like, I know it's not time for dinner. Like, that's
like a fucking triangle.
Kids,
I refuse to think that, bro. Bro, in feudal Japan, they had fucking horns up the ass, okay? When the Mongols came to fuck shit up, like, they knew how to fucking get people, like, to go. They weren't going, ping. Like, the Horn of Gondor should have been around. Like, what the fuck?
So the bell's going off. And then Yamane and the villagers rush to see the monster.
This is the best part of the movie to me. This right here.
Can I describe what it looked like to me? You know when you're like young and bored and like you have like a sock puppet and you like put it on your hand and it just looks like it's got like a massive overbite. Like you just see the head. That's all you see is just the head. And
rickety, all rickety too.
Bro.
The teeth like convulsing like a shit.
The teeth were not like in sync at all. It looked like if it talked, it would have had the biggest lisp.
But wait. We get that first, he doesn't even do anything.
No.
And then, like, when you shoot to the crowd, they're all, like, stunned, right? But then when you shoot back to Godzilla, he's, like, all stretching his mouth. Like, ah! Yes! Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm excited!
What blows me away is, like, the whole time the villagers are running up, see it, run back, run up again. they take like 10 steps forward and then 5 steps back and then another 10 steps. Like, it was this part though, like, I will say this is probably one of the worst choreographed parts in this entire movie.
I'm gonna call bullshit on that, okay? I'm gonna tell you why. As a young lad, I think I was like about 7, right? And it was like 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night. And you gotta understand, I'm 7 years old. And I'm stupid as fuck. So I'm outside. And I noticed like this glowing thing outside. And it was glowing, moving around. Like, in the sky. And I've seen enough fucking in the fantasy where I'm all fucked up with that shit already. And I'm like, oh shit. It's an alien. It's an alien ship. And, like, I'm looking at my friends. And they're like, oh shit, that looks like an alien ship as well, too. And we're kind of like, ooh, that's kind of scary. But we're going forward to it. Like, let's get a better look at this shit. And I'm like, we should go back. And I'm like, but, you know, it's aliens and shit. So I understand these people. Like, if this is the first time I saw, like, a giant head going, going back down, like, peekaboo. Literally. I want to go and see it again. Like, all right.
How long is it before we see the actual full body, Frank? Like, how long is it?
It takes a minute, but, like, this was enough, though. Like, it's the face. The face and neck alone was like, yeah, I understand. Like, all right.
I almost forgot where the eyes were because I was like, because it was so contorted. Like, it was so bad. Like, but it had to be the perfect side frame of Godzilla. It was like at some of his finest work.
Yeah. So we see, what is it, 10 ships were dispatched as well too to kill the monster. What else happens at this part right here? He starts invading, right? He starts coming out. Mm.
Yeah.
And then he makes his way to and just starts wreaking havoc.
Wait, hold on. Wait, did we skip the part two where like it was probably one of my favorites? Is this right after they saw him and he like ran right back into the water and you just see like his chicken footprints?
That's what it is. Sorry, that's my fault. I went ahead right there. So at this part, when he plays peekaboo, he goes back into the water and is like, nah, I'm not doing this today. Nah.
And just the footprints, though. Like, the footprints were like... I just couldn't because I was like, man, like...
This is after that we see that my man KY gets a colleague, right? We get introduced to Dr. Sarazawa.
Can we just talk about him? Like, hold on.
Kooky as fuck. That's what I'm gonna say.
Yes. Wait. I just saw his name. I just saw his whole name. But go on while I'm looking for that.
I can try it right here. Daisuke Sarazawa.
Daisuke Sarazawa.
Daisuke
Serizawa. Yes, Daisuke. So if any of you have not seen this movie, which I'm pretty sure a lot of you haven't, because I had it until just, it was a week. My bad, Frank. just until this last past weekend. I cannot say it without, like, wanting to yell. And you know what I mean, Frank. Serizawa! But Serizawa is like the prime, like, mad scientist looking dude. Like, he's got the fucking resting bitch face. He's got the eye patch. The eye patch. And did they ever mention about the eye patch? Did I miss that? Or was it just like, that's what it is?
I think that's what it is, unless it's lost in translation. But
probably. Because you just know. It's like, okay, you know. I'm pretty sure there's a story there, but we're not going to get it. He's got the slick back hair. he's just, like, mysterious.
He's also the ultimate creep, because not only that, we also get introduced to Emiko as well, mm-hmm. too, which is my man KY's daughter. Mm. And she's another kooky one herself, she really because is. She's another one that's like, you know, I will see, won't she? She's, like, literally in this movie to be, like, Sarazawa is, like, love interest, but, like, I don't want to get to you because you're so dangerous because you're a fucking mad scientist.
That was her brother, bro. Sexy.
No, wait, hold on.
Yes, Emiko. Yes, Emiko and Serizawa are brothers. I mean, siblings.
Let's see here. Ms. Bond, make sure if I remember this correctly. I could swore that they're both together.
No, the other dude. She's with the other dude.
KY.
No. KY is the father, and then there's the other guy. Serizawa is the mad scientist. It's like they're not together. I swear they're either because she at one point she had said father, and I don't know if she was just saying that like in that third person or kind of thing or you know.
Like mother.
yeah, exactly. You know, if she was referring to just her father, but she had said it when they were having a conversation. So that's when I thought like, oh, you know, like they might be siblings or something. But no, like the love interest I got to find is Shinagawa. No, hold on.
Serizawa. Yeah, I'm right. Yes. Emiko decides to break off her arranged engagement with my man KY's colleague. Serizawa.
Oh shit, man! I missed all that
because yes, I knew it because of her love for my other dude. I'm gonna botch his name, Hidikio Ogata, the ship captain, the ship motherfucking captain.
Yeah, that guy.
That fucker,
Hideto Ogata. Ogata.
There you go, Ogata. So she definitely is in this movie, right? Just to be like that. Literally. you scared the shit out of me, Jake. I was like, I've been rolling.
My bad.
I've been promoting Instat separately. Guys, we're not experts on this podcast. We're just having a good time.
No, not at all.
Someone's screaming right like that. Oh, serious.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Good catch, so, yeah, Frank.
We'll get back to we'll get back to the story right here. So, my man KY is stressing so much after the destruction he saw with Godzilla and the face and you know, right here, just by the fucking face. And the yell, and him retracting back into the water, means that we should kill Godzilla, number one, but two, he's unfucking killable. How are you making these fucking observations?
I mean,
like, what are you testing?
You know, think about it, though, Frank. Think about it. I mean, I guess if you had seen a creature like that, and you know how you can just tell by looking at something like, oh, yeah, that must be pretty rough, or I don't know. I'm just pulling shit out my ass here at this point, but like, I'm pretty sure after observing this thing's skin, like, you know, he looks like he needed some Vaseline for some years now, but I'm pretty sure they saw that and was like, yeah, man, that looks like some heavy duty jerky, bro. Like, I don't think this thing can be killed. And honestly, just the observation that there's this gigantic ass dinosaur monster alive. Like, if he's obviously been around for this long, even despite, you know, being essentially bombed with radiation, you know, he's not dead yet. What makes you think that he can be killed? You know, so it's a pretty realistic observation.
Let's just try to shoot it first, okay? Let's, like, get, like, a plane to go, pew, pew, and, like, the fucking, like, bullets fall off. I'm like, yeah, you're right. He's gonna kill him. I would have took that.
You know what? Bring that up. I just realized, like, half those damn villagers had fucking weapons, and not one of them shot, huh?
I'm just saying, like, 10 years after Hiroshima, you know, they don't want to deal with shit right now, okay? They just run, it's Godzilla. Like, it's a meme everywhere since, like, you know, the 50s. And yes, I understand.
But, yeah, so...
So, yes.
He comes with the observation.
So, he gets the observation, basically, that he's unkillable and must be studied. My man, Serizawa, he's... You know, the mad scientist, and he really takes the helm, like, you know what, nothing's unkillable, and I'm gonna find a way to help you with this and try to destroy this monster right here. So I like Serizawa's attempt to be, like, proactive with this shit. He's like, you know what, no, fucker, like, you can't tell me nothing can die. I'll determine that shit, okay?
I am God.
This chick is leaving me for some fucking captain right here. Fuck you. I'm gonna... My destiny is this beast, which literally it was by the end of this movie. So you like the presentation of Serizawa. How do you feel about Emiko? Like, and Emiko's love interest with the will she won't she with the captain and Serizawa.
I didn't care for her at all. Like, I'm sorry, but she was just somebody that had, like, absolutely, like... Like, if you're not going to help, like, get the fuck out of the way. Like, that's the way I saw Emiko throughout this whole thing. But, you know, her role, though, like, as compared to, especially when you look at other female actresses back in its time with America cinema, like, hers could be easily just kind of, like, the camera followed her around, but... She wasn't made to be the star of this. You know what I mean?
She wasn't, but she does at least move the story a little bit, especially with...
She moves the story, but she doesn't put herself front and center like a lot of the, you know, like a lot of the female actresses were put in, you know, movies at that time for like one specific reason. I mean, yes, in here... You know, there was the love interest, but, you know, even some of us were not able to fucking see that, obviously, apparently.
with the part where Serizawa actually shows, like, the pre-oxygen destroyer, the experiment, where he, like, he does it to the fish and the fish start dying, it freaks her out.
Yeah.
I think that right there moves the story along a little bit because she sees the horror, like, fuck, guy. Like, you're just doing shit to do shit now.
You know what I really liked about this scene? Because I even had to rewind this because I was like, what the? Did I miss something? Because, like, oh, and let's talk about Emiko's screams, though. Like, that was pure 50s cinema. You know, just, like, obnoxiously loud, you know.
But no one screamed at Godzilla like that. Fuck no. The fish. Like, the fish is going to scare the shit out of me. Like, you dissolving matter is going to scare the shit out of me.
That is true.
Gigantic fucker with like teeth gnarly and just like ah, like no.
Okay, can you understand why I just did not pay attention to her throughout this movie? Because, but anyway, going back to what I was saying is that after her yell, it just jumped to the next scene, and like I was, and I was like, what the fuck? Like what happened? Because you didn't see the fish dissolve. You really didn't. You just see him do something, and then you see her expression. What I like was a technique that was, I want to say, ahead of its time, because it did that flashback later on going back to the scene. And that's not something that I would have expected. And I don't think I really saw a lot with films back at this time. There was really not like, you know, oh, here's a past scene. And, you know, I don't want to call people stupid back at that time, but I don't really think that the audience would have taken to it. You know what I mean? So using this kind of technique to do that flashback later on, and in even just like cutting off what happened, because I'm pretty sure, like, you know, people in that theater were like, well, what the fuck just happened? You know what I mean? So that was a very, very ahead of its time technique to use in film back in that time.
What happened was he wasn't wearing any pants under that lap scope, and he was just like,
he pulled
a gremlin.
He just opened.
It's just like, no! This is why she runs to the captain.
Oh my god.
So immediately after this, we get to see Godzilla reemerge again. Mm-hmm. And this is where you actually get a great look at the monster. So right here, right now, I wasn't going to go by the face and the puppeteering right there of how your reaction was, because that was a little more comical. Even for right now, looking at it right now, it's a little more comical. But seeing the full-fledged monster attack the train station, how did you feel, like, as being like a monster, seeing monster movies and knowing the evolution of where they came from, was this pretty practical for you? Did you like it? Did it not work for you?
No, again, like, you know, like I spoke earlier, to be honest, I mean, you know, we're gonna find its faults here, you know, because of the time that we're in. But watching it, I appreciated it. I really did, because I thought that you know, because that was just, that, besides, like, I think this is the first time we actually see him destroying something, whereas it was implied prior. So seeing the destruction on its own with the implying that, oh, this is being done by Godzilla, like, it's like, oh, okay, you know. But this is our first time seeing him in true destruction, so I appreciated it. Like I said, I'm watching it, I'm like, you know, like, this is actually really good for something in its time. I really thought so.
I love the train scene of him just like trying to gobble it all together. Yes. Part. Oh, mm-hmm. I like the design. The design to me screams like something was burned. Like something was burned and it's been living for a while and it's pissed off. And maybe the eyes are just a little googly for my taste at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
But other than that, like the whole design, yes, I love the dinosaur feature and all, but it's just a weird amalgamation of different things. Like, you have like even the ears. The ears are very like, I don't know how to describe the ears, bro. They're very much like almost like ape ears, or like,
they're like bulges out of his head.
Yeah, almost.
Yeah,
they're like bulges out of his head.
Mm-hmm. Go on. What were you gonna say?
No, just like the design itself. I love how the skin, even if it's a black and white film, mm-hmm. it does look like it's like scarred, mm-hmm. not deteriorating, not like a radioactive Chernobyl experiment, mm-hmm. but more like, it was already someone attempted to blow this shit up and it didn't work. That's what it looks
no,
like.
Literally, Like, okay, another great way to describe it is kind of like, you know how fucked up Glenn's head was by the end of Negan beating the shit out of it? That's almost kind of like what Godzilla's head looked like. It was just very bulbous and, you know, kind of points out here and there. So, like, you know, to be honest, like, I'm pretty sure it was hard to create something outside of the drawing that he wanted to do. And maybe like I think that's all that it was. You know, because when you see the drawing, and I'm pretty sure like the drawings was like pretty much spot on like what we would see, you know, from Godzilla on the original poster, if it was on a poster. And you know, maybe somewhere we can find some original drawings of Godzilla the puppet, but I, maybe they ran out of time and funding, and then that's what they got, and he just said, fuck it. They'll get the idea.
I mean, oh, Maggie, I love you. I love that part. Fuck Glenn. I'm sorry. I gotta say, yes, it looks a little distorted, but at the end of the day, I like this version so much that I prefer this version over the next, like, 4 or 5 movies of Godzilla films. Like, this right here looks so unique compared to the other Godzilla movies, which are a little more campy and more for kids. I think when I finally got rid of this, like, got over this suit right here, it was when they did Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla, because he looks a little more angrier at that time. But this right here, this is weird. It's kooky, but it fits this movie specifically, because even in the next movie, it does not look this great. Like, it looks weirder. It looks like they drowned that suit up and they hung it up to dry outside. And now it's like all wrinkly and hard and shit like that.
And you know, let's even like talk about some, you know, one of his most iconic features, which is his things on the back.
Dorsal fins.
Yeah, his dorsal fins on the back. You know, like what are your thoughts of that? Because there's like what, just 3 like giant ones, and they each have like their own little pokies in the back, you know, on them as well. So like, how do you feel about seeing the original dorsal fins and how it evolved? Because you know, again, that's one of his main special features, especially when he's about to attack.
You know, it's weird because dorsal fins really don't serve any kind of purpose besides cooling and heating an animal, especially when you get like things that have dorsal fins, more like the stegosaurus type animals, the dinosaurs. Those are specifically just to like cool off when it's too hot, or maybe bring some heat in when it's a little too cold. So like more like what's the word I'm looking for? Like little thermostats on your back, if you will. I wouldn't know how that would work with Godzilla. In my opinion, I feel like they were just kind of putting things together, like, oh, here's a T-Rex. We'll be cool if a T-Rex if it had dorsal fins. So I'm like, all right. And now he swims. I'm like, all right, that works too. But it's so iconic now. Like, when you look at it now...
because they actually have a purpose.
They do. Like in one of the movies... they definitely say that Godzilla has, I think, 2 brains, and one of the other brains is located in the dorsal fin. And there's different animals in where we live in now and today where they do have certain spots in their spinal cords or in their tail, which does use like a response as a brain or at least as a nerve that controls the other part of the body. So I can see that right there. I like those little things right there. Or even in recent movies where you're seeing him charge up. Like, for some reason, that's like his battery. Or that's how he uses echolocation or whatnot. Like, I like that. That's cool.
Yeah, because in this one, I don't know if we really got to that part yet, but in this one, his whole body glows. Yes. And he doesn't even charge up. It just glows, and then suddenly it's like, wow. You know, so it was very interesting seeing that for the first time.
So let's get to like the meat of where everyone loves Godzilla, why people love Godzilla itself, the atomic breath. Now, we've seen different versions of the atomic breath before. This right here probably would be the most underwhelming if you are used to a Godzilla movie. and you see like beams or like fire, or even like fucking laser beams coming out of his mouth. This was more like
I thought, to be honest, man, I thought it was fucking ice, because he's attacking the like the electric towers.
Yeah,
and that's when he first uses it, right?
Yeah,
yeah. He's attacking them, and like he's blowing the breath, and the effects that started, it looked like he was freezing them, and I was like, this Superman motherfucker, like he's got ice breath, like what? And then they started wilting, and I was like, oh, that's his radioactive breath. I was like, okay. And see, yeah, because that's what it looks like. It looks like a bunch of dry ice, and I'm pretty sure that's what the effect was. It might have been dry ice or something, because that's what it looks like.
I think, yeah, they implied that this was like radiation being melted, but it really did look like dry ice. But still, kudos to the effect team at that time to make something look like radiation or something look like it's melting or falling apart, because... You know, like I said, you're taking what happened in real life, imitates really what happened there. So who better to look at the devastation of what radiation can do than the people who actually lived through it? So, you know, kudos to them for trying to attempt that effect, right? All this chaos.
Do you think?
What?
I was going to say, just piggybacking off of that. Do you think that was the intended purpose for that attack?
Yeah, definitely. If I'll even go further too, I don't think like the movies and even like this right here, we see that atomic breath used as a weapon or as a campy little like move that Godzilla can do, right? In this movie, I kind of feel like the intent was that you could open your mouth and radiation could come out and spew out. And even by opening its mouth, like vomiting radiation, like it's gonna attack everything around it. So it wasn't like an intentional like blast of energy coming out of it. I just feel like it's just waste. Like he leaves waste while fucking moving around, waste by touching things, waste by even opening his mouth and then just coughing on you, like breathing on you, like a breath, like a strong breath,
yeah,
like melting your face.
I see. Yeah, very good observation. So. You don't think that they did this just to add in like another attack that he does, but more of like, here's the damage that radiation does.
Exactly. Like, all right, the bomb happens. Like the bomb is him walking around destroying things. That's the bomb. Mm-hmm. But the breath is the residue. It's the after effects. When the bomb is done and the napalm goes up into the air, and the radiation just seeps through the whole entire state, country, however you want to say it. I think that's the residue of what Godzilla leaves.
Yeah, especially when you get to that one point where he actually attacks. Like, I think that's the first time you see him use it on people. And I even had to rewind that again because I was like, did they really? Because they disappear pretty much right after he used it. Which is, you know, anybody who's read up on it, like, that's one of the horrors that people said that they saw. Or, you know, something that was told was that literally people disappeared into shadows. Which is what happened when he attacked this one car. And it was military that... No. It wasn't military that he attacked, right? Right here, it was just, like, regular civilians at this point.
No, he attacked them at that point right here. He did tanks, he did fighter jets, he did people. And you saw the effects of everything. You see tanks melting. You see jets explode. But the people, that's like the most devastating part right there. I think that was, if anything, that was the bravest thing that this director did right here.
Yeah.
Was that, yes, you can be fictional all you want. Like, oh, cool, a tank is melting. Oh,
yeah.
The radio towers are melting. But when you see people actually deteriorating, that's the selling point right there. Like, this is a political standpoint. This is what happens when you mess with this.
And that was like, and look at the angle that was shot from. Like, that was shot so that, and at that point, you're looking it dead on. Like, it was a very beautiful, like, oh, I hate to use that, but from a filmmaker's perspective, that was a very powerful shot. I'll say it like that. That was a very powerful shot.
So, after this, we get to see the day after. Godzilla goes back into the ocean, and we see hospitals and shelters. come together and look at the devastation of Tokyo. And, bro, it's just a wasteland of, like, death and destruction. And that right there, that scene of just looking at everything dismantled literally had to be, like, it had to be Ichiro Honda flipping the pages of what happened in Hiroshima and just seeing people dead. I'm like, you know what? How can I capture a moment right now? I think that was it.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, I'd have to give you that. Yeah, I had to give you that too. And I wonder, like, I really want to know, like, how they pulled that up, because, you know, they obviously use models for the actual, like, devastation. But, you know, when you put the people into it, like, I really want to know how they put that together and, you know, how they decided, you know, in what order to put that into. So it had, and I'm pretty sure he struggled.
Definitely.
It had to be a struggle, like, really, because as you're writing it and as you're seeing this in your head, you're like, fuck, should I really do that? Like, you know, like, because I'm pretty sure it hit home, you know, very hard showing that. And it, but, you know, in your heart that I have to show this. So
definitely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. And then going right after that scene right there where we see the people and survivors suffering from radiation sickness due to Godzilla's radiation spewing at them. A distraught Emiko tells my man Ogata that Serizawa has a weapon that might actually kill this monster. So now,
after he strictly told her, made her pinky promise, basically.
He's like, don't tell anybody this shit that I got right here, because this is crazy.
But he had every right to do that, though. Because I think after he saw that it affects that it has, because, you know, he just witnessed or read, or basically he just witnessed a very powerful weapon.
Okay. Yes.
Now I have created one too, intentionally, unintentionally, right?
Yes.
Or intentionally, but now that I have it and now that I know, like, what a weapon can do, like, fuck, like, dude, should anyone have this? Like, no. And he's right. But at the same time, I understand the science of knowing that, yes, this could be done, because if anyone else did it, he knows exactly how it was done. So he knows how to stop it. He knows how to take care of it. You know what I mean? So
go ahead. Let me cut you off there too, because there's where the mad scientist dichotomy comes in, because it's not just like, yes, I created something and won't I sell this to the government, or somebody finds out, they'll take it for themselves and use it. That is there. But it's also the ego.
Because you're holding power in your hand. You're holding actual power in your fucking hand. Like he said, he could kill off half the world like that if you want to. Like, and putting yourself in that brain, like, of course you're going to feel like that. Like, you're going to.
It's not like showing Emiko any love or anything or affection. Like, hey, you'll stay with me because I did this shit. No, it's like, look at my long dick that I just fucking put on the table right now. I can destroy fucking matter. And you better not say anything right now, because, like, maybe I took that as a threat. Like, maybe that's why she screamed right there.
That was going to say, yeah. That's what that yell was.
Like, I see myself in there. I'm going to fucking deteriorate now. So it's hard to really put Serizawa in a sympathetic role, honestly, because this right here is like, that scene right here kind of conflicts me. It's like, yes, you're the mad scientist. Yes, you made a weapon. Yes, you don't want nobody to know it, but you're also, your ego is showing right now. It's so exuberant right now that you need to tell somebody that you created destruction in a fucking fish tank.
He needed some salt, Peter.
Yes.
He needed to bring that dick down a little bit.
But Emiko raises that dick up right here and says, oh, my man's over here. My man's got a weapon that's going to kill this fucker. And my man, Ogata, is like, ah, shit. Well, I guess so, because none of my shit's working. The Navy's not working. The Army's not working. Might as well give this shit a chance.
Which, I still don't even know what the hell that is, to be honest. Like, I honestly...
The Oxygen Destroyer?
Yeah, like...
Destroys oxygen. There you go.
Apparently. I mean, I get the concept of it, but I'm like, really, like, wow, that's also got to be like the most bullshit ass. Like, I don't like, Of course.
This is the 1950s, yes. Okay? We have to deal with, like, the Creature of the Black Lagoon and fucking all those sci-fi movies, The Blob and shit like that.
And, but you know what, though? Like, if you didn't watch the rest of the movie, like, as soon as the Oxygen Destroyer is introduced into the movie, then you're just like, oh, well, there you go. Yeah. That's how they're going to do it.
Well, all right, take this as, like, 1954. We weren't as jaded as fans back then. We were probably like, oh, all right, that's a fucking
but
movie telling right there.
But here's the other piece of the conversation that comes into play, that one that extends throughout almost the entire Godzilla series. Do we kill it, or do we let it live? Do we kill it because of the destruction, or do we keep it alive and study it? Because nothing like this exists. So what do we do? Like, obviously, yes, he's causing hell and destruction, but is there something that we can do where we do not kill it? Again, what this is a conversation. This is an argument that literally extends throughout the entire Godzilla lore, does it not?
Not even the Godzilla lore. You can look at it as even relatable into now, from then till now. You look at anything right now, if we were to discover anything that's dangerous to us, let's say we discovered there's certain things out there in the ocean right now that we know are fucking dangerous, but we're not going to kill it because we want to make sure that we can discover it and research it and see what the hell's going on. Same thing if we fucking discovered Megalon. That shit's fucking huge. It could probably wipe out a whole fucking country. Yet we'll probably be like, ah, PETA. The WWF.
For just pennies a day, you can keep the Megalon alive.
Yeah, straight up. That's the dichotomy we're living right now. Just for you right here, a little description of the Oxygen Destroyer. Disintegrates oxygen atom and causes the organism to die of rotting asphyxiation. Fantastic.
That sounds like a fucking Cannibal Corpse lyric right there.
it's another allegory for the atom bomb, though, right there.
Yeah, no.
Like, literally, it is radiation.
He's literally throwing this in America's face. He probably knew that America was going to take that, too. So he said, ha, ha, ha.
And they do. They do use it in the second, well, in the remastered American version. They do talk about it as well too. Like, should we mess with radiation? Should we mess with atomic warfare again? Like, well, Japan already made something, so we might as well use it.
Like, that sounds like
they avoid blame already. They take the blame out of their hands and they say, like, oh, they already made something. They might as well do it. We can't do it. We won't do it again. But they can do it.
Yeah, good old
douchebags.
Yeah, for real. It really pisses you off. Like, no, like, it's not even just like a leftist or, you know, kind of political thing. Like, it's just like, as a human being, it just pisses you off. Like, it really does. So we're getting to the good part of the movie.
So Emiko and Ogata go ahead to Serizawa to try to convince him, and dude's like, fuck off. He initially refuses, explaining that superpowers of the world will surely use this and construct more oxygen destroyers and become a super weapon. So good for you, guy. Kudos to you for not fucking trying to destroy the world. But after watching a program displaying the nation's current tragedy, Serizawa finally like the accepts singing. Their pleas. Yes,
the choir.
Swear to God, this is where they got the Mothra theme. But
I had to. Yeah.
But yes, you get the whole choir sitting like the We Are the World of 1950.
It was like before you knew Sarah McLachlan was a thing. Like, this was it. This was Sarah McLachlan in Japan.
So this fucking brings a tear to fucking Serizawa's eyes right here. Emiko breaks down crying. Everybody's crying.
I was crying.
Godzilla was crying. He's like, ah, shit.
What am I doing? Why am I like this?
I'm so indecisive. So A Navy ship takes Ogata and Serizawa to plant the device in Tokyo Bay. After fighting Godzilla in the water, which was
tell me, hold on. Can we talk about why he was letting Leonardo DiCaprio draw him like one of his French girls? Why was he laying down like that? Like, he had his arms around his thighs and everything. I was like, oh, he chilling. Like,
listen, Godzilla sleeps the way he sleeps, unapologetic. No one thought that they would go to the deeps of the bay to look at how Godzilla sleeps, okay? His long Godzilla dick could have been out there, down there, and he would have been sure. No one's going to see this. And
I got his sudden, tail. I don't think that's his tail. Go ahead.
That's the real question right there.
King of the monsters. All right.
Bar none. So Serizawa unloads the device and cuts off his air support, which I
wait. Hold on. Yes, but can we talk about what's his name? Ogata? Talk about his puppet? Like, well, first of all, the puppets in the water. Like, why were they walking like zombies? Did you notice their heads out? Like, I had to look at it again. I was like, bro, like, these are legit. Because I don't know how they did the water scenes, because there's scenes where they're inside their helmets and you can like see the water and like they're obviously in water. So I was like, oh, you know, again, that was another like kudos to them, you know, for the effects of that kind, until I saw the damn puppets walking in the water with like the like it was literally like watching Team America. the arms were just flapping.
I think that was we were seeing like the first introduction of them in the water. Acting it out. I don't think they're actually in water straight up. I think that we're looking at one of those movie magic scenes where we have like maybe like a waterfall or something like that, trickling water right in front of them, or like looks like water right in front of them, maybe like a mirror or something full of water. And in back of that, it's them like fucking talking with looking scuba outfits on.
Which even back then,
that's awesome. That's awesome.
Well, yeah, but no, I'm saying like. With a big ass helmet like that, like
that's pretty safe compared to what they were doing in the United States with Creature Black Lagoon, where the dude in the fucking costume was literally in the water struggling to breathe, doing fucking aqua dancing, aquatics with this chick. This bitch is over here dancing like, ah, this is so good. And this guy's jaws right under her like a.
Hey. America likes to call out. But yeah. No, guys, like, you seriously have to watch these fucking puppets. And then when Ogata is being raised up, like, he literally becomes, like, just, like, fucking limp. You just see.
You know, when I get the whole act of this, Serizawa has to sacrifice himself because this is his machine. He wants to make sure it works and he wants to be able to be the one to kill Godzilla.
Well, he could have totally gotten out.
Yeah, one, he could have gotten out, yes. Two, I would have wanted more fuck you attitude from Ogata instead of the sympathy. Like, your best friends. No, you guys are banging the same chick. Like, no. I don't care about no sympathy. It's just like, I got your bitch, man. Thank you, bye. Like, I would have appreciated that. Low shade. Like, fuck you.
No.
We're getting rid of two things.
Instead, we got... Go ahead.
No, I want to hear you say it.
We got Serizawa! 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 That was like my favorite part, bro. Like,
straight up!
I literally. What?
No, straight up! It is a great part, and why it's a great part, yeah. Too, is because there's no emotional connection with any of these characters.
No, like literally, that was like they had just met. Like, they apparently knew each other, but that was like the first real conversation that they had.
Yeah.
Just like a day ago.
Like, I know Japanese people are proud, you know, they're respectful in their culture, but no, You're not gonna fucking meet somebody the first day. And even if you do, know that your girl was banging this guy, and like, oh no.
Not even Emiko gave that much emotion. All she did was just kind of like crumble to the floor. Like that's literally all she did.
Listen, Emiko.
Not even his partner. His partner just like sat and just like
Emiko took one for the team. She said we killed two birds with one stone. Okay. if anything, Emiko introduced this far-fetched weapon so she could get rid of Tiwazawa as well, too. So he wouldn't have fucking put her in the fucking fish tank. Okay.
Oh, he was already up in that fish tank.
So we get to see the Oxygen Destroyer at work. Serizawa plants it out. His oxygen tank is cut himself. How did you feel about... I thought it was a little comical of the struggle at first. You see Godzilla reacting. He's like, and then the flashes of like skin turns to bone out of nowhere.
First of all, when I saw him struggling in the water before like the scene where he actually like comes out of the water and goes back in, but just him just like, you know, swashing around in the water, I was like, oh shit, he drowns just like I do. Like that's what I look like when I'm fucking struggling in the water.
He does that one last breath of
Yeah.
And goes right back in like
It was sad, though. It was sad,
because who knows? This could have been like Godzilla's turning point. He could have literally been there looking like fucking Hugh Hefner lying down in the water. And like, what? I don't want to fuck it up.
He was reflecting. That is how you lay down when you're reflecting.
I turned a new leaf. You know what? I'm gonna go to China. I'm gonna see what the fuck China is about, okay? Yeah, I heard he got a wall. Maybe I can fuck that shit up, you know?
I was going to say, he still wouldn't be able to fuck shit up as much as Japan did. We're not going to go there.
We're throwing jazz right now. Throwing jazz stuff, right? I heard that America thing is nice. It's only a swim away. Why not?
Right? Just jump in that current and it'll take me right there.
The Godzilla drown in his own filth and turn into fucking bones.
He looked like if anyone's ever seen National Lampoon's Christmas, basically when they cut the turkey open and it just like flaps open with just nothing but bone, like that is exactly what Godzilla looked like at the end of the Oxygen Destroyer doing its work.
So basically my man KY comes back after being irrelevant for the whole movie. Literally, throwing air over here makes another fucking assumption right now. Just to put a caveat on the whole movie, he's like, you know what? It's only been me. I've been fucking the plot has been moving because of my ass right now. So I'm gonna throw one more for you guys. And he says, and I quote: "If nuclear weapons testing continues, another Godzilla may appear in the future." Oh, and it ends. The movie ends.
I was gonna say, and then the movie ends. Oh man, like there was so many things about just that statement alone and that scene alone. I was like, oh, they went for it. Yeah. They really went for it. Yeah. but again, I did not expect Godzilla to die in the first movie. Oh shit, we should have said spoilers at the beginning, but we didn't. But yeah. Yeah. Godzilla dying. I was like, oh, okay. So how did everything else happen? Like, I want to know, okay. What got us to the next point? Was it because America took the idea and so Japan just decided to continue it?
I think so. I really think that once Blockbuster in Japan, they saw money with this franchise. Well, not franchise. They saw money with this movie. When America bought the rights to it and put their own spin on it, it was less of a political thriller and more of a science fiction horror movie. And even with that, I think with America was already doing like the monster mashups. So you look at Lost World, and Lost World was already dinosaurs fighting each other. You look at King Kong, and King Kong had them being the shit out of fucking T-Rexes and stuff like that. So like the monster mashup was already ingrained in pop culture. and you go into like the Universal Monsters and them teaming up against each other and fighting each other and whatnot. So it only made sense for like the popularity of Godzilla going to America, and people are saying, we want to see another fucker fight that thing. And that's why we got the second Godzilla raids again, which we see him fighting his longtime friend, nemesis Anguirus. And we'll get into that too another time. But I think because of the American audience is why they pushed for this movie. For that movie, excuse me.
So America takes credit once again for but again, you could not have this concept without the ingenuity of the Japanese imagination. Like, you seriously couldn't.
So much to the point where they cut it out of Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
So much so to the fact that America said, yeah, no.
So I'm going to give you the choice right now. For our next movie to watch next month, we have a choice. We can actually go in order and just go on to the next movie, which is Godzilla Raids Again. Or we can sidetrack and maybe look at the spoof film that I call Godzilla, King of the Monsters, and see how different that movie is from America's point of view to this movie.
Since this one's still fresh, I'd say let's do it. Let's jump into the American version.
No problem.
And see. You know, but because that opens up the next, you know, the next conversation. It's yeah. like how Japan sees this story and how America saw it.
Yeah.
The same story, you know, and that tells you a lot about, you know, political landscape altogether. So I'm ready for that conversation. I don't know what the world is, but I'm ready for that conversation.
So, as it's like your first viewing of Godzilla, the first Godzilla exactly, too, what would you give like a rating? Like, let's say if you wanted to give this from a star rating from 1 star to 3 stars, you could use half stars in it if you want to, but from 1 to 3, what would you put this as?
Oh, damn, we're giving that little. I'm going to give it a 2, only because, like, because there was so much great with this movie. Like, it really was. Like, it was so much great with this movie. But it is just, like, it because Godzilla just looks so fucking quirky, like, half the time. Like, it's hard to not look at it and laugh. And because knowing me and my humor, like, if I were alive back in 1954, I probably would have laughed, too, at the sight of the peekaboo behind the hill. Like, that was just fucking funny. It just looked ridiculous. Like, I think I've had nightmares of of that, and I had never seen this before, you know what I mean? But, like, yeah, because, you know what, I'm going to give it a 2.5. And that 0.5 is only because of, you know, the lack of imagination. And I think they could have done a lot better with, you know, Godzilla, because Japan has always been remarkable at, you know, look at the many gods that they have. Look at, you know, the statues and the drawings, you know. I felt like they could have done a lot better with that. But everything else in it was just like pure perfection for its time. Way ahead of its time. The script wasn't half bad, you know, to be honest. Like, you know, a lot of times we rip these movies for, like, you know.
Well, we will.
Yeah.
if we're going by script standards, this is like 100 right now.
Yeah, no, seriously, for its time, the script was not bad. It really wasn't.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you right now. Like, I will give it a 2.5 as well, too. Little minor things that probably won't make it a 3 for me. I think it was very short. And maybe not short and sweet. It was just short, but like I felt like there was room to like grow with the mythology in the movie. Some characters, like, you know, a little bit more backstory on Serizawa, a little backstory on
Please, don't say Emiko. Like, fuck that bitch.
No, not Emiko, but just my man KY Jelly over here knowing a fucking everything. a little maybe backstory on the Elder talking about Godzilla as well, through in that mythology. Mm-hmm. I don't even want to leave room to grow and whatnot, but I think I would want some of that to be panned out just a little bit more. And yeah.
Actually, I think it would have worked if Godzilla never existed. Because yeah. that also, because when you really, 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 and I just got this like right now, like if you really think about it, that kind of like almost defeats your own argument of what you're trying to say.
Exactly.
But it's like, oh, well, this motherfucker already existed. The only difference is that this motherfucker is radioactive.
Exactly. And they do use that in certain versions of the movie. When we get into, like, this era right now is called the Showa era. When we get into more of the Heisei series, which is, like, the 90s, like, the late 80s, 90s, they use that terminology. Like, this is, like, an animal. Like, it was a dinosaur at one point, right? There was an island full of dinosaurs that were not
like touched by anything from humankind whatsoever. It was just a living monster island. And the atom bomb hit, and the radiation from that bomb affected all those monsters on that island. Hence, this is why we have all these fucking monsters now. Which makes kind of sense, in a way. In a way.
We're using our imagination.
Yes.
Our imagination.
If we're going KY's fucking logic, yes. But I will give that 2.5 as well too. This ushers in the new form of I'm gonna butcher this name right here, but tokusatsu, which is basically the art form of a man in a rubber suit or a female in a rubber suit and acting it out right there. And a lot of times you got to see Godzilla being acted out and portrayed. I think this is the most subtle way we've seen somebody in a suit work as a monster. Compared to the other Godzillas doing fucking kamehamehas or fucking like just kangaroo kicks and shit like that. So wait till we get to those.
I'm ready for that fucking conversation. But guys, what I would say to this, and you know, look at how much fun we had with this conversation. You know, don't take what you have for granted now. Yeah. There's a lot to be admired with old film, old music, you know, like a lot of the shit that, you know, that was way before our time.
When you were talking about the score was beautiful. Fantastic, bro.
Was this the score that was used again? Is this the original score that was used in the new Godzilla movie, or was it more of the like 80s, 90s?
The one that they used in Godzilla King of the Monsters was it was altered, but this is the DNA of that song. So this is the first they used that song. They used it in the movie, but it is altered a tad bit. It's actually used better in Shin Godzilla. So when we get to that movie, you'll hear those references as well too. Mm-hmm. But in the Monsters, not only do you hear that one, you hear a remastered version of Mothra's original song, which is pretty dope. Rodan original theme as well too. So little things like that I appreciate about Godzilla King of the Monsters so much, because it's a callback in so many good ways. The fact that critics tore this movie apart just shows that they didn't give a fuck about that art style of the movie. It's just what's her name? I keep on forgetting.
Talking about the actress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All of them. Fucking, you know, all of them. Fucking Eleven, fucking Kyle Chandler, whatever it is.
Yeah.
All those fucking people. If they're not giving star-studded performances, then it's not a good movie. Fucking the CGI in that movie made... We'll get to that movie eventually. I'm not going to give
it But it just goes to my point, though. It's like, if you really want to call yourself a Godzilla fan, or, you know, even a film, you know, someone who really enjoys film or music, like, you have to appreciate these. You have to watch it. You have to pick it apart, you know, and if you really got that eye for art, and the passion for these kinds of things, you'll be able to see it. You'll be able to see a lot of the good from it. And we should never just be quick to write these off just because, you know, they were done with a guy in a fucking rubber suit, you know? that's always going to be my advice. Always going to be my advice. And, you know, we ain't got shit to do. It's on HBO Max.
Exactly. So before it's taken off HBO Max, guys, go ahead and watch this movie, because this is a phenomenal movie. It's not just a guy in a suit movie. New York Times praised this movie at the time as well too. You have awesome reviews that this movie was changed the landscape of movies, not just monster movies, but horror movies in general. This movie has won numerous awards and accolades as well too. It goes without the doubt to be one of the most influential monster movies, or influential Holocaust, post Holocaust Japan movies of all time as well too, with the themes attached to it. So if you're looking at this just from a historical point of view, looking at the world at that time in 1954, that's amazing right there. You can look at this movie just for that and be amazed and say, okay, yeah, Godzilla's in it too. So if there's nothing else, yeah, you can definitely just watch this for a Godzilla movie. But from the historical point of view, there's so much meat to kind of like taste in this movie.
Absolutely. No better way to say that.
That kind of concludes it right here, man. Do you have any last minute thoughts you want to talk about this movie before we wrap it up?
No, not about this. I'm ready for more.
So sometime early August, which should be like in about 2 weeks from now, we're going to be hitting this up with the next movie right here. We'll do Godzilla King of the Monsters, the Americanized version.
Jake, it has been an absolute pleasure. Tell everybody right now, if they want to talk to you about Godzilla, if they want to talk to you about pronunciation of the characters, like the way I botched it, or just Japanese culture, or hell, even your ramen videos, please let them know.
Yeah, so if you know you want to reach out, you can always find me on Pop Culture Fanatics. You know, I'm usually posting a lot pretty often there, and usually trolling Frank shit with some like Baki memes and shit. That's where you normally find me, or you can find me on Instagram at 6VMPR6HRT6. I usually do know what happened there. I normally do my own podcast, but I actually have that on hold right now because I'm working on potentially doing video instead. So that's definitely some work in progress there. And hopefully, you know, hope to see you guys on there soon.
Oh, rock and roll, man. Of course, if you want to find me, you can find me on Instagram at Val Cisco, on Twitter at Uncanny_V. Pop Culture Fanatics is on every podcast station, whether it comes to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio. You name it, we're on it right there. It has a Facebook page by the name, Instagram page by the name, and a Twitter page by the name as well, too. So it's easily accessible for those who want to find this podcast. Comment, rate, review, subscribe, talk shit about how we do or don't know about anything about Godzilla. Right. I will say this, though.
There's going to be those actually people.
They are, but I will say, respectfully, Godzilla fans aren't as bad as some other fans out there. You know, I'm a pro wrestling audio, and people bash pro wrestling, Star Wars, all comic books. They take all that to heart. Godzilla fans, we want people to come into our world. We want people to understand exactly what the hell is happening in these movies so we can enjoy it together. So they're more forgiving when people like us kind of dive into culture and mispronunciate or forget a part about a movie. You know, I think they're a little bit more forgiving. Unless you talk about King Kong, then it's fucking all fucking war.
Agreed. They agree.
Which, once we're done with Godzilla, will probably be next year. If we're still doing this, we'll maybe deep dive into King Kong, because I would love to, because I love King Kong. He's one of my favorite monsters of all time. One of my favorite movies of all time as well, too. So I would love to do that. But this concludes Godzilla and Friends. Jake, I appreciate you for being with me for this first episode, and we look forward to more to come.
As always, brother. Always.
Take care and have a good one.
You too.